Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ron Spomer Outdoors Podcast. This episode brought to you by, appropriately enough, Knives of Alaska. And the reason I say appropriately enough is because our guest today is from Alaska. He is a master guide in Alaska with decades of experience, including how to handle big brown bears. If you don't want to get beaten up by a brown bear, I would stay tuned to listen to Mr. Phil Shoemaker. Hello, Phil. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing up there?
Doing just fine. It's still winter. Winter doesn't want to leave yet. And we got bear season starting in a few weeks on Kodiak and almost a month from now on the peninsula.
Wow. You're going to be heading out there pretty quick then, huh?
We're packing up and sending supplies out this week.
Wow. So, Phil, for folks to understand where you are coming from, I have known you for many, many years now, but not everybody in the world does, although you're fairly famous, especially for your episode with the handgun and the big brown bear that we're going to talk about. But before we go there, I'd like to get a little background information on you. Obviously, you're not 20 years old. How long have you been a hunting guide in Alaska?
This is my 45th year of guiding in Alaska.
45. Yeah, yeah. Now, you moved up to Alaska roughly what year was that?
Permanently in 1980, and that's when I started guiding. I came up a few times in the 70s, but just to kind of look around, and it stuck.
Yeah, apparently been there ever since. Now, you've got a homestead there. Did you literally live in the Alaska bush while you were doing your business and then raising your family there?
We have virtually the whole time we have. We started out living in the bush to raise our kids. Our kids were, you know, my wife wouldn't let me deliver them at home. I offered, but other than that, they've grown up in a hunting camp since they were infants. And wow. Both of them guide now as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I visited with Tia several times. She's a heck of a hunter. She's guys, Tia, Phil's daughter, is a slender gal who guides brown bear hunters, and she shoots a 416 Remington. So the apple didn't fall very far from the tree on this one. So Phil, when you started guiding up there, did you have to work for somebody else to get started as a guide?
Yes, you do. You have to spend at least 3 years working as an assistant guide for somebody before you can even apply and then be signed off to apply to get your full registered guide license.
Mm-hmm. And then to become a master guide, what's required?
Basically, if you stay out of jail, it helps a lot. And then at the time, it was like 15 years of continuous guiding with contracts signed and recommendations from numerous clients.
Uh-huh. Now, I know you're down on the Alaska Peninsula. That's where you homesteaded. Have you done all of your guiding down there?
No, I've guided pretty much all over the state. I started in the Chugach Range, and then I had a guide area up in the Brooks Range for years. So we were guiding, you know, grizzlies and caribou and doll sheep and pretty much everything. But then once I moved on to Peninsula 35 years ago, pretty much specialized just in big brown bears down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that brings us to the event that I think everyone's interested in. Folks, Phil was forced to shoot a brown bear who was threatening his clients. We're going to let him tell the story, but the upshot is that he successfully did that using a handgun that you're probably not going to believe. So I think without any further interruption, Phil, I would love you to tell us the story about that incident, exactly what happened.
Well, I can do this, still kind of vividly burned into my memory. But okay. I had a clients, they brought their, they had two young ladies. They'd come up with this two or three times. He was a professor from Cornell, and his wife and two, they were teenage daughters at the time. And they'd fish with us multiple times, and we see bears virtually every day we were fishing. But this day, it was too windy. I couldn't fly in the morning. So the kids got doing something with my daughter, and then it looked like I could probably make it to a close creek. So I asked who wanted to go fishing, and husband and wife wanted to go fishing, and the kids wanted to stay with Tia. I mean, they were teenage daughters. They weren't tiny kids. And so we flew off, and walking down to the stream, there's an old dry creek bed that ran parallel to it, and it was overgrown. The grass was in places chest high. It was waisted chest high grass. And then along on the sides, 5 yards on either side of us were with the trees. And as we came around a bend, I heard a growling in the bushes ahead of us, and it was coming toward us. And I yelled and hollered and had my pistol out. Well, and the bear turned around and ran. Well, the pistol I had picked as we left the plane, I had a 44 Magnum I've carried for 30 some years. And I just done some testing, for Tim Sunless from Buffalo Boar. He'd sent me some 9mm ammo. And I took it out. That was just the week before. And I set up some damp magazines and dry ones and kind of a typical gun writer, how deep were these penetrating? And I try all the other bullets along with it. And the 9mm was not far behind the 357 that I carry with 180 grains. And I thought I had shot bears with that before, just carcasses to test. I'd never had to kill one. An unwounded bear. I'd killed plenty of bears clients had wounded, but, and I thought the 9mm would do it. And it is late in the afternoon. I said, you know, this thing is a lot lighter than my 44. So I thought I'll just stick it on. I'm going to fish this creek for 30 some years. So we walked down there, and no sooner had we got there, this bear comes charging out, but I hollered and it turned and ran away, which is what most bears do. But what it had, and then within 20 seconds, we had turned around just to go start walking again, and the bear had circled around, got downwind, and was coming straight back at us at full bore. I could hear him in the bushes just, whoof, 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 and branches were crashing. And I knew I wouldn't see him. He would be within 12, 15 feet of me before I could even see him in the grass. Mm. And he was coming. Mm. I was thinking, you know, your brain's going fast in these times. I'm thinking, even my 4.58, I'll be lucky to get a shot off at this bear. And he knows who we are because he's already circled around, got our wind, and is coming back. And he's sounded pretty serious. But as he came out, the clients were 20 feet behind me. And as the bear came out, he went straight for the clients. Wow. And for their benefit, they just grabbed each other. The husband put his arm around, they put his arm around each other and fell down in the grass. And the bear was standing on them. I looked, where's the bear? He's standing on me. He's swinging ahead side to side, highly agitated, but confused because bears, when they run into more than multiple people, they're figuring things out too. And I could see he was standing. I was thinking, am I going to have to shoot this bear? I don't want to. He was maybe 12, 15 feet from me at the most. And then I was thinking, where are my clients? Whatever I did, I didn't want to shoot a client. That's, I think for guides, that's pretty much a bad career move. So plus they were friends. So as the bears, then I think, well, he knows who we are. All this goes through your mind in split seconds. He knows we're here. He knows who we are. He's come back intentionally to attack us. So I figured I had to shoot him. So I popped him with a 9mm right behind his shoulder. The head was just swinging side. The head was bouncing back and forth. He's looking around, looking for the clients, because he is literally standing on top of them. They told me at the end.
Did he literally have his paws on their flesh?
Yes. The, The woman, she says, he could have bit us at any time. His face was right at my face level. She could see he was standing on above him, but gee, so he's right above them, and the head was just going back and forth over them. And so I said, I didn't know. They were gone as far as I was concerned. I knew where I'd seen them last, and there was a bear standing there now, but I didn't know what had happened to them. Because my concentration was on the bear coming out of the bushes. And so I finally said, okay, I'm going to have to shoot him. I popped him right behind the shoulders where the same place I'd shoot with a rifle. And he roared and he turned and bit at it. And then as he turned back around again, I hear him thinking, okay, do I have to shoot him again? It's like, so, well, yes, I got to. So I popped him again. Same results. Turned, roar, bit at the wound. Turned back around. Hit him again. It was kind of a whack-a-mole then. Every time he'd turn sideways, I'd shoot him again, right in the same spot, right behind the shoulder. And I could see he was kind of getting tired of the game. And he did one more time where I hit him the third, turned around, hit him the fourth time, and he ran. And he turned to run. I'm usually, you know, after all these years of wounded bears getting away, I try to break his hip, but I'm carrying a 4.58. So I shoot him in the rear again. Thinking, and then I thought, what am I doing? He's leaving. That's all I wanted at this moment was the bear to be gone. I saw him pile up, not 10 yards away. He just nosed over and piled up. And they, two heads popped up out of the grass. I was glad to see that. And they said, we heard your warning shot. And I'm thinking, that's what warning shot? But there had been a pause between my first one and the second one. I must have picked up tempo a little bit afterwards. I wasn't aware of it, but they were. And
so your final shots were pretty quick, huh?
They were pretty quick. And I thought, well, he was still moving. I thought, I'm going to go over and finish him off. I kind of what I do. I started walking over. I said, I better look. I had one round left. And I said, I'm not going after a wounded brown bear with a single shot, 9mm. And then the lady says, are we going fishing still? And I said, well, if you want to, yeah, we can go. And she says, I don't really feel like it. So
I can believe it.
So we walked back. The plane wasn't maybe, I don't know, 100 yards behind us. I just lost an earbud here. Plane was real close. It wasn't 100 yards behind us. We walked back, flew back to camp. And when I got out of the airplane, Tia was there, my daughter, because she had seen us leave and she knew something was wrong. She says, why are you back? I said, we had a DLP, which by Alaska, that means a defense of life and property. That's the way Alaska. And, you know, her face just went white and she looked to make sure everybody was safe. My concern was if I'd had two teenage girls also there at the same time, I have no idea what would have happened.
But the presence of mind of those two adults who fell in the grass like that's pretty amazing. Oh.
It was. They just literally grabbed me. I don't think they had been practicing any maneuvers, but it was perfect. It could not have ended any better, except maybe the bear run off before I killed it. But
How big was that bear?
It was probably 800-900 pounds. He was a mature bear. I think he was about 12 years old. 9.5 foot bear by trophy standards. It was summertime, so he was a little leaner than they are, and he had been feeding. He had a lot of fresh scars and fresh wounds on his ears and his face. And the whole time we were skinning him, we came back and skinned him because the fishing game requires you turn in the hide with the claws and everything and skull. And there was bears fishing. We could hear them 25 yards away from us in the creek we were going to fish. They were still there fighting. So I think that bear had been in a fight, probably lost it. And or run somebody else, and he wasn't going to have any more. Oh, he tried to run us off.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
Now, as we skinned it, I did notice all those, one of those rounds was sticking out of the meat on the other side. It had penetrated all the way through the bear and was under the hide. Most of them were all right in the heart lung area, which he was just hemorrhaging blood. That's why he died so fast. But they did get the penetration that I had. had estimated they would with my testing, but I don't recommend a 9mm, but it was buffalo bore makes it's 147 grain hard cast flat nose bullet.
What was the rough velocity? You probably know the velocity of it.
It's around 1300 feet a second.
1300.
He made those. I talked to Tim at length afterward. And he said, you know, I made those. He said, he's a big bore guy. He said, but I made them for people who didn't really want to buy some sort of hand cannon. They don't want to buy a 44 Magnum or a 454. But if they would work, he said, I just interviewed you to see if what you thought of them. And I said, well, they will work. And it's a whole lot easier carrying a little, you know, Glock or SIG or something that's lightweight with you. And my experience with bears, I mean, I get charged at least half a dozen times a year. I mean, and they're bluff charges. You can usually scare a bear off. There was a possibility that bear would, if you'd seen three people, he might've been scared off too. But unwounded bears act different than wounded bears. Wounded bears are fighting for their lives. An unwounded one doesn't, I might've pulled the same thing off with a 22. I don't know. I'm not going to try, but it worked.
So, but normally what are you packing for a bear in case of a self-defense sort of thing like this? Surely you're always carrying a 44 or something.
For years and years, I carried a 357 with 180 grain bullets. It out penetrate this one. And then the late gun writer, Finn Augard, came up and I told him I had a 357. He thought, well, why not a 44? And I said, well, where you hit him is the most important thing. It doesn't matter how, you know, six misses with a, you know, 454 Casull, not going to do any more than about two hits with a 9mm. It's a lot easier to hit. And when I got home after the dust had settled for a day or two, both my wife, Rocky, and my daughter, Tia, said, why were you carrying a 9mm? Don't you know better? I said, well, let's go down to the shooting range. And I got a whole bunch of little square wooden blocks we set in. And I set them out there about 10 feet in front of us, about like the bear was. And I gave him my 44. I said, see how many of those you can hit as fast as you can. Well, you've shot 44 Magnum, especially light mountain guns, and you're covered out from the recoil and it's slow and you're trying to get again. Then I gave him the 9mm, said, how many of these can you hit now? And they're going pop, 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 and they're hitting them. And he goes, I guess you're right. hits count. Misses, big loud misses, and speed counts. I can get three. I went out and timed myself afterwards. I get three shots off, and hits on close range, with a 9mm versus one with a 44 Magnum. When you're nervous, when you're scared, when the world's collapsing on you and your fine motor skills are gone, you got three chances of hitting it instead of one.
Well, Phil, address this for me. So many people, when we're talking about handguns for bears, one thing is they'll often say, what a joke. You might as well save it for yourself because you can't stop a bear with a handgun, any kind of a handgun. There's that theory. And then there's the, well, if you're going to have one, it has to at minimum be a 44 Magnum. And if I were doing it, I'd carry a 500 Smith & Wesson. What are the arguments for and against that?
Try it. Like I just said, you get more hits off with the gun you're familiar with. The old gun writer, no second place winner, Bill Jordan. He was, I don't know how many gunfights he had been in. He was a phenom with the gun. He said he couldn't shoot a 44 Magnum. He shows him in his book, the involuntary, your eyes closed, the recoil, the noise. He said, you can't hit as well as a gun that you can, you know, comfortably shoot with, quickly with. And hits count more than horsepower. And everybody likes to think, when a big bear is after you or you think it is, no gun feels big enough. I can vouch for that. Yeah. But what really counts is being able to put a bullet in it and hit it.
Yeah. Okay, so if a 9mm or a 10mm or a 357 are adequate, probably not ideal with a 9mm, but it's adequate. But a big part of that is the bullet, right? You've got to have the right bullet.
You need a bullet that penetrates. And a bullet that does not expand, because on an animal that weighs 800 pounds, it needs to go through. You're not shooting, you know, bad guys that are 150-pound bad guys. You're shooting a massive animal. And what people confuse is hunting, a hunting gun, and a protection gun. There's two different things. And if I'm going hunting, no, you're not taking a 9mm. I'll take a Well, I'll take a 454 or your 475 line ball or 500 Smith & Wesson. Those are a lot better hunting guns. You're more likely, if you're sneaking in, you've got one shot, you can take your time carefully and aim and put a 50 caliber in them. Yeah, that's the best. But all of a sudden, you get a big adrenaline dump and something's coming at you from unknown sizes and you've got to shoot fast. That's a different ballgame than it is with sneaking up on something and shooting hitting it.
Yeah. So the 9mm you were carrying, was it a standard size or a compact? How many rounds did you have in your magazine?
Yeah, it's a middleweight. It carried eight. It was a Smith & Wesson Model 39 with a double action only. I like that one for simplicity. There was no levers, buttons, anything else. You just pull it just like a double action revolver each shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Well, that's good to know. Now, you mentioned actually hunting, and I think it's worth talking to an expert like you about bears and bear hunting. And the same thing applies. You know, so many people think you need at least a 458 to go bear hunting and be successful at taking a grizzly or a brown bear. What have been your experiences over your long career up there?
I've killed bears with other than 9mm. I used a 30-06 for years. When I first started in the late 1970s and 80s, Nosler quit making their 375 partitions. I was a very big fan of the partitions. And they were hard to come by. Well, they were gearing up to make them by stamping them out rather than turning them down. But I couldn't get any. So I went from my 375 back to a 30-06 as long as I could get partitions. The bullet's what does the killing. Mm-hmm. I don't care how big the gun is. And so a 30-06 is fine. The world record bear has still been killed by the 30-06. The old Kodiak guides, Pinnell and Talifs, and I mean, everybody recommended a 30-06. And basically that's the minimum, but with a good bullet, it will do the job. They'll shoot clear through any bear that ever walked. So,
wow. And placement. What weight bullet?
Oh, the biggest bear client, the biggest bear we ever had probably weighed 1,800 pounds. He was absolutely morbidly obese. Wow. He had a single shot from a 300 Weatherby, and single shot with 180 green bullet. But a good bullet, whether it's a partition or a Barnes X or a Swift A-frame or trophy bodied, or we have as many good bullets right now, but a heavier weight will usually penetrate a little deeper. And so on a big animal like that, penetration is key. If you miss something, you might going to hit, but we'll keep going, hopefully hit something else vital.
Yeah, yeah. Do you like to shoot through or do you not care? Some guys will say, oh gosh, you have to have dumping all that energy into the animal. That's what kills it. I argue against that all the time, but what has been your experience?
I agree with you completely. I would rather have two holes bleed more than one. And I'd just assume the bullet come out the other side. The difference in energy dump, as you want to call it, my 9mm doesn't have a whole lot of energy compared to any rifle. But yeah. You put it in the right spot, it'll kill them. And one that penetrates is going to leave more. That extra energy that you lose on the other side probably wouldn't have done you any good anyway.
Yeah, that's been my experience. So it's good to hear. So if a hunter were coming up to hunt with you and had his dream hunt for his big brown bear, what do you recommend they bring?
I recommend whatever they're comfortable. I ask them, what do you have? What do you like to shoot? What are you comfortable with? I had two brothers from Colorado. They were both ranchers. One of them had a 7 mag. He used to use a 25-06 when he went elk hunting. His guide wouldn't let him shoot it, so he got a big 7 mag. He said, that's what I've got. He said, my other brother, he says, he's coming. Can he bring his 270? And I said, I knew they could shoot. They're Colorado ranchers. I knew they could shoot. And I said, sure, if he gets 150 grain partitions, bring his 270. He shot a monster bear, record book bear, it was close to the den. He put one shot again right behind the shoulder. As the bear turned to bite it, he shot it again on the other side, and the bear never left its track. That 270, wow. The bear died right there. And the guy with the 270 had one running up a hill. He stuck one all the way through its lungs, and it slid back down the hill dead. So where you put them, there's no substitute for placement or bullet performance.
Yeah.
We can just argue
about what's the lightest? What is the lightest cartridge or bullet that anyone's ever been successful with on your hunts?
On our, that 270 probably is the lightest on
bear hunts. That was it?
Yeah. But I know, I know locals that shoot them with 223s. They put a couple holes in the lungs and they're going to die. I wouldn't recommend it, but it's, I know a lot of locals. I have some close friends in Circle Hot Springs. They went in to buy some more ammo. They were out of ammo for their Mini 14. And the guy at the Sportsman's Warehouse says, you know, what do you want? What kind of ammo do you want? He said, well, just for moose and bear. And he got refused him selling ammo. But they'd been doing it for years.
Oh, my God.
But they snuck up close, stick a couple rounds in it. And but it, that's different than a sport hunting. And it's not something that I would recommend, but it can be done. But here again, but it emphasizes that placement and performance are the two factors that they're trump everything.
Yeah. Now, something else about bear rifles and handguns, bullets and all the rest of it is this idea that you've got to be able to carry it, right? I mean, you saw this with yours. You could have packed your 44 or you could have brought along your 458. Why didn't you bring your 458 when you're guiding fishing clients?
Well, because you're fishing. It's kind of hard to carry a rifle and stuff, and you're helping them fish and bending down, help them take off fish with a rifle is a pain. So our whole family carries carries handguns. And well, like I said, we see bears. We run into bears at very close range with handguns all summer long. They're, brown bears are not typically aggressive. They'll protect their territory, but they kind of look at people as another, you know, maybe a dominant bear. So they're actually pretty easy to get along with. You just mind your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, grizzlies have a reputation.
Interior grizzlies are perpetually hungry, whereas our bears are super well fed. And so they're, you know, they might want that fishing hole and might want to chase you off the fishing hole, but they're not, it's not the type of aggression that you get with grizzlies on the interior.
Have you ever had any incidents with grizz when you're up in the Brooks Range or in the Chugach?
Yes, but I never had to shoot one again. You can usually stand them down. I mean, bluffing is, bluffing works. Looking them in the eye, it's a dominance display. I mean, I had another writer one time ask me, he said, well, everybody says, you don't look them in the eye. That's dominance. I said, you're darn right. It's dominance. And do you want to be dominant or do you want to be, you know, submissive? And so stand there and look brave. And one good thing about a pistol is it gives you the feeling of it's easier to feel brave when you got a gun. If you stand
go
there
ahead,
with that
punk,
one,
make my day.
It's but yeah, big bears recognize that if they run up to you and you're standing there and not afraid of them, they're an intelligent being. They're assessing the situation. Well, if he's not afraid of me, then maybe we don't need to do this. And then I have done it with grizzlies too. Occasionally I've had to shoot a shot with a handgun or, you know, at a rock close by or scare them off. But that's, and a lot of times that here again, it scares them. I've scared them. Bear spray works too. My earbuds are falling out. Bear spray works too. But I found out that it's that as it comes out scares them more than getting hit by that. So I've tried it. I get really? Very well close. I just go something new and different at a sharp noise.
Really?
So yeah, it's
That's interesting. Have you, and then I hear from a lot of folks who say the bear spray doesn't work. They'll run right through it if they're really angry. If they're just curious and kind of bluff charging and stuff, it does. What's been your experience?
That's, I've not, If I can tell it's a serious charge, I'm shooting. But I've sprayed lots of bears with it, and it's a great educational tool. And I look at it, you're saving a bear's life because, once they learn, okay, this stay away from people, it just kind of reiterates, you know, it's uncomfortable around them, and bear spray does that.
Yeah.
No, I would not want to carry one going after a wounded bear in the bushes. That'd be kind of suicidal.
See, I got a letter from a fellow. I read it on one of my shows here recently. And he said that he is an Alaskan and he, one day was, I don't know what he was doing out in the woods, but he was by a tree or something. And he says, who knows, hyperbole, but he says he felt the breath behind him on his neck. He turns around and there's a grizzly looking right on him and he had bear spray and he says he sprayed it right up his nose. And of course, the bear howled and ran off, busting brush. And just, he said, I don't know if he stopped running yet, and I'll bet you he'll never come near a human being again, because he did just what you said. He just trained him that this is probably not what you want to mess around with.
It is. They do have, they've got an incredible memory. I had two small bears. They were twins. They were 2-year-old bears. Mom had kicked them out. And we were fishing on the edge of a lake, and we'd caught some fish, and I saw a bear coming. So I was standing by the fish to protect them. Well, one of the bears is pretty brave. He kept getting closer and closer, and he got within, I could have kicked him. I mean, he was within 3 feet of me. And I could tell he was watching the fish. I knew what he was wanting. And so I thought, I had some bear spray. So I sprayed him with bear spray, and he backed up, washed his face in the water, just like a raccoon would or something, with his paws, and kind of stood and looked at me, and he walked away. 20 minutes later, he was on the bank 50 yards away from us, and a bunch of fish, you've probably seen the sockeyes, they get all crazy and they get flopping around if they get scared. One of them popped up on the bank next to him. He ran over to that fish, and they stopped and looked over at me at 50 yards away across, and backed away from the fish. After watching me, his was the same bear I had sprayed 30 minutes before. So he attributed, somehow trying to take a fish away with this guy here hurts.
That's amazing. Wow.
but likewise, if a bear that is used to, especially in the lower 48, people worried about, bears coming in and take their meat. If a bear's learned he can get away with it, you got to untrain him for that too. So that's
got to remember that too. Sure. Do. Yeah. Got any other wild adventures with bears up there? How many years you've been hunting those now? 40 years?
This is my 45th year. I started out hunting bears and sheep. So it's my 45th year of getting bear hunters. And we've been 35 living right there in the refuge. We live on a wildlife refuge. It's a wilderness area. It's, according to Alaska Fish and Game, it's the densest population of bears in the world. So we literally see bears every day.
So
we have them in our yard.
You and your wife raised, but you and Rocky raised two kids in this wilderness with the highest bear density in Alaska, and no one's been injured by a bear.
No, not at all. Matter of fact, they've never even bothered. We had a grill outside all summer long. They've come around and they don't recognize it as human food. There's enough fish around. And now if we've got moose meat hanging, or I just butchered a bunch of fish for the day for meal, then there's not a problem.
Amazing.
But they'll come in the meat shed. If we've got meat there, they want in.
Yeah, I suppose. Now, I'd like to touch on some of the anti-bear hunting stuff that's out there. A lot of folks are going to say, well, why would anybody shoot a bear? They're an endangered species and you can't eat them, and it's just a waste of time. You're going to wipe them out. Has the bear population decreased in Alaska since you've been there?
Not that I've noticed. I mean, all over the state, bear populations are doing well, especially where we are. We had a die-off 1 year. We had super heavy snows, deep snows. And a lot of the older bears died in the dens. We found a few dead ones. But the main predator on bears is other bears. They kill the big boars, they'll kill the cubs to bring the sow back in to eat again. And they breed her a couple weeks later. They'll follow her around. So the bear population right now is probably a higher population. I mean, after that incident, that was 10, 12 years ago, we saw a lot more sows with triplets. And twins, and now that it's back to normal again. We still got good big boars eating little cubs. And
so, whose side are you on, huh?
Exactly.
How much longer are you going to keep at it, Phil?
As long as I can. I still love doing it. I mean, I look forward to the beginning of every year. And at the end, I was like, take a break and go do it again. But
go do it again, huh? What's the average hunt like? So a client, let's say I come up to hunt with you. I'm going to fly into Anchorage, I suppose, and then take a little hopper plane over to your place. Do you have to come and pick me up with your cub or something? Or
We have my son runs an air taxi business too, so he can fly him in. Or we've got a local. He also guides too. And actually, I transferred the federal concessions to him and my daughter. So they actually run the show. I just work for them, which is even better. That's why I still like it, because somebody calls in the middle of the night, we're out of propane, or we're out of that in this camp, or this camp's the tent's leaking, or whatever of the million things that can go wrong. I don't have to go jump in a plane the next morning and go take care of it. I can just stay with my client. And so all I still, right. I used to do that too, but it's a, so we're all, the family's involved. The grandkids are there. We got two sets of grandkids. They live right there with us all 5-6 months while we're in camp. And just like our kids did.
Nice. Now, when the hunter, it gets to your place, then you fly out to different spike camps, tent camps, or little cabins.
We have hunted. We can hunt. I mean, we're right in the middle of refuge, our homestead. I mean, like I said, bears come through. I've taken a few bears out of there, on especially spring hunts. You can sit there and glass out the window and see bears. We've killed some big bears come through. If a hunter happens to be there, the bear comes through. It's like, it's kind of hard to say, well, don't shoot that one. But yeah, we fly out to a spike camp, and most of our guide areas are all close by. So the flights are 15, 20 minutes tops to get to camp. And we've got the tent set up and a guide there, or a packers, or whoever's going to help out with their hut. Last year I had a father brought his son and his son's friend. And so they both came and they wanted to hunt the same camp. And it took us 3 days to kill them both, big bears. So.
Wow. So is most of your hunts scheduled for 5 days or seven or what?
We schedule them for 10. The season's, well, it's an 11-day season. We just schedule for the whole season. And that way everybody pretty well gets a chance to pick through bears and see bears. And because we hear that all the time. I went so-and-so, we didn't see bears. And it's like, well, that's usually not a problem we have, but we're picky. And we occasionally, you know, somebody can't hike or is real picky or wants a blonde bear instead of the big brown one or whatever. But we're usually very successful. And we know, let's say we live there. It's our home.
Yeah.
So we know where they come out in the spring. We know that we'll all put camps this spring. My son once put me in a camp where the bears come over the mountains, you know, coming into the valley, because there's caribou are dropping calves and moose are dropping calves. So the bears know where that is. So we've got our camp.
Now, those bears take a lot of ungulates?
Yes, but it's specific bears. They're learning now. They've been tracking them. Fish and Game has been tracking bears. And in a couple of places, it's a small percentage. But in some of these areas, there'll be like three or four bears will kill, you know, 90% of the bear, the ungulates in the valley. Of the other bears don't learn to hunt. It's a learned behavior. You watch, some of them are excellent fishermen and others flounder around trying to catch fish. Some of them learn how to hunt. Some of them learn they can pick up moose calves. I watched one moose drop a calf, and two or three bears came by in the next 3 or 4 days while we're hunting and tried to get in. The cow would chase them off. She'd just kick them to death. We watched one big bear came around. He got downwind and he just took off at a dead run. He never stopped. He went right through, grabbed the calf and kept going without even breaking stride. And the cow's looking around, what happened? He had learned how to. Wow. He wasn't going to stand there and get kicked, but that moose had run off all the other bears, but that one knew how to do it.
Huh. Well, what about this idea that a bear is so strong and powerful it could kill a bull moose with one swipe of his paw?
I wouldn't be surprised. I've never seen it happen, but I flew one moose season. As I was going to town to pick up the clients, there was a huge bull on the hillside close to camp. I thought, come look at him, show him on the way back when I picked up the clients. And I kept going. I couldn't see him. I looked and said, there's a big brown spot. Well, it was a bear laying on top of that 70-inch bull moose. They do learn how to kill moose. I mean, they get, and a lot of times I've watched them run, moose will swim out in a lake, you know, to try to get away from a bear. Well, that's a bad mistake because a bear will climb right up on the trout. I've watched that.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So don't try to outswim a bear, right? Huh.
Yeah. What about wolves in your area? Do you see quite a few wolves, or is it not a strong wolf area?
There's at least one herd or one pack of wolves that's around there pretty much all the time. And we see they change their denning sites occasionally. Sometimes they're real close to camp, but we see a few. a few wolves during her hunt. So they're quite wary.
Yeah. Yeah, they've always been. All the times I've been to Alaska, I don't know that I've seen wolves more than twice. And it's usually the backside of them going away quickly.
Yep, it is.
What are the moose populations like in your neck of the woods? Now, it used to be a pretty good trophy moose area.
When the caribou died off / moved out, they did both. I mean, a lot of them died, but the rest of them joined another herd. So the population was down low. The moose population, the wolves and bears started, all they had was moose left. So, it's not all. I watched wolves in our yard hunting mice, just like Farley Mowat said, jumping up and pouncing just like a fox. You've watched foxes and coyotes do that. I've watched wolves do that in our yard when they're in a high vole population. So wolves are very, they can eat a lot of things. They prey on beavers. There's a lot of beaver population now. So wolves will eat beavers. They'll eat mice. They'll eat whatever they can. But when the caribou left, the moose population it suffered for a few years, but it's I'd say back to full. It's excellent. Whole peninsula wise.
Good. But the caribou are pretty much gone, huh?
Nope. They're back. Fish and Game gives out limited tags now. They haven't given them out to non-residents yet, but, the problem with caribou, they can boom really fast and then crash. And the biologists are starting to realize now that we better start allowing some hunting earlier or when there's not quite as many and keep them down rather than let them boom and crash. That's happening on the North Slope right now.
What do you think causes the crash? I've always figured it was probably overgrazing of those tundra plants.
Yes, it is. The biologist that was there when we started pointed it out. You can see the light colored lichens that they eat in the wintertime, between our place and we're about 80 miles from King Salmon. And you don't see that anymore. He said, you don't see that. That's their winter feed and their winter feed is gone. And when that's gone, they're going to be gone.
That's what I thought. The first times I went up to Alaska in the late 70s, early 80s, I would see these incredibly, they look like coral sponges of this white, pale lichen.
Yes.
And then some of the locals said, that's what caribou eat. We call it caribou lichen. Okay, made sense. And then I noticed after years of the population for a while there, what was it, in the 90s when they just went like caribou everywhere, especially up in Canada. You could five on a license or something. But you would fly over that country, and it was like a cattle yard down there with trails everywhere. And then when we were on the ground, I wasn't seeing these lichens anymore. And I said, I think they're just overgrazing it. And then
You need to be a biologist.
Well, I talk to them. They tell me. They tell me everything, and I spit back.
Just
a regurgitator.
But that's exactly.
Well, I'm gonna have to come up there and see you. I'm gonna have to come up there and see you sometime, Phil. I've been in that area fishing a few times and ptarmigan hunting, and I took my first caribou. It must be quite a bit south of you. You know where Ugashik Narrows is?
That's
Ugashik Lake.
Yes, that's very close to ours, actually.
Is that close to you?
Yeah. We're by the next lake over, Bashiroff, right there beside it. As a matter of fact, our guiding concession takes just a corner of Ugashik Lake.
Oh, I'll be darned. That's where I hunted my first caribou. Right below the Ugashik Lake. So you're in some beautiful country down here.
I think so.
I'm gonna start putting my spare pennies in a jar and then come up and see you sometime.
All right. Well, put all that fame to work and let it.
Yeah, you heard him, everybody. Send your money in. You got to send me up to Phil's place. We need help here.
Give him a full report.
When is your season this year?
It starts on May 10th, so we'll be hunting on May 10th. And so we've got to get...
It just goes for 11 days?
All the supplies,
And then you just fish for the rest of the summer?
Yeah, we'll take off. The salmon don't really start running in Bristol Bay until about the 1st of July. So we'll start by the end of June, start fishing. But in between then, we're going to be building projects and hauling in supplies for the rest of the season. And I mean, everything's got to be flown. We do about a $10,000 Costco run and a couple more, then fly all the meat, everything out, the main supplies, and fly them into camp.
Mm-hmm. Quite a business. Now, I want to end up with getting your pick for the ideal handgun to carry along for protection. If I were going to Alaska, anybody's going up there and they're thinking, I better have a handgun to protect myself from this slight chance of a bear attack. What would you recommend they carry? Handgun and caliber cartridge and bullet. And then if they're coming up for a bear hunt, what would you recommend for a rifle and cartridge bullet?
Well, for a handgun, well, as we basically, you know, if they were listening to us earlier, you can get by with a 9mm with good ammo, or you could probably get by with a 38 special with a hard cast bullet. I know Joe Nava, who worked for the NRA for years, he taught up in Fairbanks. He always suggested a 357 revolver. The 357 revolver is what my whole family carries. I mean, my daughter-in-law, my daughter, my son, and me. Most of the time, my 357 is why I went back to what I was using when I met Finn Augard. I've got my 44 Magnum, but here again, weight. I mean, ask any cop, he's going to carry a big 41 or something, or is he going to carry a 357? That's why they got popular. They've got the same amount of penetration, basically, with the right bullet choice. Don't get these, you know, super duper expanding bullets that they, you know, they want to, you know, and here again, we're talking about there's, you know, I guess horses for courses here, you know, policemen are hunting different things than we are. They want expanding bullets or self-protection. You want expanding bullets. So on a bigger bear, something that penetrates deep.
Okay. And then now wheel gun or autoloader?
We carry wheel guns. And it's more of that's a personal choice. If you're comfortable with either one of them, they'll work fine. I picked up a 10 millimeter. I've got a little 9mm, SIG that I like a lot. It's nice and lightweight and the bullets shoot fine. My Smith & Wesson that I used. But there's nothing wrong with a good, if you like a Glock or you like a 1911 or you like the Springfield Arms or whatever you like, a gun that you're familiar with, because if things happen, they usually happen fast and you haven't got time to think. You need to be proficient with what you're using. And that same guy, that's why I recommend ask a person what they use for hunting. You like a 30-06? Get some good bullets and bring it on a bear hunt. If you want an excuse for, you know, tell your wife you need a good big gun, then go get it. But you don't have to have it.
Yeah, I hear you. What about barrel length for a hunter? Doesn't really matter that much, or should they be thinking about a shorter barrel?
That's what gun writers argue over. No, it does not matter. Mine's 21 inches or so. I mean, in the brush, but hunters are not going to be I just had a discussion with a bunch of other guides on the Alaska, you know, the board of, you know, professional hunters. And we don't, if a hunter can't kill a bear, when they're set up and shoot it, they're probably, if they blow the shot, you know, if you get 50, 75, 100 yards, whatever you shoot, going in after a wounded one is not what they're likely to. Most guides aren't going to. I don't want a guy behind me that's scared to death with a gun, so I'll do it myself. And then maybe a shorter barrel. But if you got, you know, a barrel, some with a 26-inch barrel, you like it, you shoot it well, bring what you like. It's going to be, you're going to be telling stories, and that's your favorite bear rifle. So it. Now for a guide, sometimes a little bit shorter and lighters.
Yeah.
Maybe better.
Do you see a lot of that 45-70 lever action Marlin guide gun up there?
They're popular in the state. I've never seen a hunter with one. I mean, I've got a Browning lever action and got one. Actually, that's not true. I keep one in camp. And by the doors, a client left it with us many years ago. And it's a good gun. There's no doubt about it. But it's more of a short range gun than most hunters paying the kind of money they need for a big bear hunt. Usually want something, if the bear is out there 150 yards or 200 yards, that they might hit it rather than a 45-70.
Yeah.
I took Doug Turnbull with his 475, and Doug can shoot that thing at most any range. So he did just fine.
He's kind of a special project. Well, that is some fascinating information. I'm gonna I'm going to save up all the dollars that people are going to send in after listening to this podcast, because I know they want me to go up there and hunt with you. If I do that, I'll be able to make a video on you and your operation, and that'll really be popular. Well, Phil, I really appreciate all the good advice. It's pretty obvious that you know what you're talking about. You didn't get old with a white beard by being stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only 25, so.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that part. No, thanks for visiting with us, Phil. And I am serious. I'm going to twist Betsy's arm.
Well, I'd love to see you
and
Betsy
see
up
if
here.
We can't come
love
up.
To. I mean, there's.
Yeah, we'd love to come up. We've been threatening to do it for years, and I think it's about time we pulled the plug on that one. So. Warn Rocky that she's going to have to put up with this one of these days.
I'll do that.
We'll
I know
she'll see you.
Well, T'll be looking forward to it. T'll be back to guiding as her kids will be done nursing, I think. But she's coming out. She comes out to camp all the time, but she's killing her that she can't go bear guiding. Like I said, she's 22 years of being a bear guide. She's chomping at the bit too. And
that's great. All right. Well, so much appreciate you being on with us, Phil. Folks, this is Phil Shoemaker we had on our show tonight, and this is the real deal. He's another one of these master guides from Alaska who learns it the hard way and the right way. And when he says A, B, and C, you better believe him because it's the school of hard knocks, and he knows it pretty darn well. Thanks again, Phil. Hey, everyone. We'll see you next time on Ron Spomer Outdoors Podcast. Thanks for joining us on Honest and Shoot Straight.